Well, it's not my thinking. It's not my opinion. This data on this is a reason for that. It doesn't work, right? Power couples don't work. It's very, very popular now because women want to be strong, independent, and powerful. What happens is, even though they started in a romantic dynamic where he was a man, she was a woman, they literally equalize the dynamic and the polarity between them. They become man on man, and what happens is sensual sexual energy between them disappears. So if you're male, conquer, be a man, do what men do to be respected, self-respect and respect by others. You know, men pull over on the side of the road when you're stuck, not women. We are the protective provider of all women and children, and anything that's weaker, that's not fair. That's what we do naturally.
Andre, if we can compartmentalize your life in three phases, you're very interesting. You look like a rock star. And I think there's good reason for it. So when we spoke off air and we're planning our podcast today, you know, the first phase of your life is probably the most interesting. Phase one, we said you were a dancer. So you were a professional contemporary jazz dancer once upon a time. Yes. You worked with the likes of Michael Jackson, Prince, Paula Abdul, Julio Iglesias. Then we go into phase number two, getting married and having kids in LA, right? Obviously the next phase, you know, just grounding, moving away from probably what was a very fast life, which we'll go back and talk about. And then step three, which is I'm guessing where you are now, is you're now a relationship coach and you help men and women get in the flow of building healthy, long-lasting relationships. So a couple of questions are, had you have had quite fleeting relationships in the past based on the lifestyle that maybe you were once living? And let's talk about working for some of these celebrities. So that's really interesting. Tell us about that. And also just welcome to the show.
That's a heck of a story. So I was an odd kid. I was a kid that didn't fit anywhere. I didn't fit in my family. It was very strange for me. So part of my not fitting in my family, realizing this at 5 years old, had me completely sort of super vigilant and watching the world. I just try to understand how that's possible. How is that possible? I actually remember thinking, feeling at five, like something went really wrong. This is not my family. I was born in the wrong place. And I also was born in Quebec City, Canada, in a snowbank, right? It's winter all the time. I'm a sun bunny at heart. Like I was in the wrong place, in the wrong people. It was very strange. So I started watching the world, watching people. So I was odd. I was awkward. I was a kid with one friend. You know what I mean? It was difficult for me to integrate. I was always watching. So kind of invisible most everywhere. Period. So that's okay. Low confidence and all that comes with it. At 15, I went to a private high school and part of the PE program was very extensive. And a girl came up to me the week before we started school, we had to sign up for classes and whatever. And she's like, oh my God, oh my God. Like, I want to take ballroom for PE, but we need a partner. You want to partner with me? Oh, I didn't know she knew I existed. Like the kid who's invisible, cute little thing. And I'm like, yeah. Like, duh.
Yeah.
Ballroom dancing. Never done that in my life. I'm almost 16 years old. Week later, we get into class. First time in my life. Now, again, I'm awkward. I know nothing. I have no talent, whatever. And I remember this like yesterday. So I remember I hold the girl in my arms and the teacher's on my right. And whatever he's doing, I could just copy it. It's just right there. I could just do it. That was interesting. So I realized I actually had a flair for this. Somehow it was a talent that I had that I just discovered in the moment.
That talent being coordination? Is that what that was?
It's coordination. It's feeling music. It just made sense instantly. It's almost like I knew it already and you just reminded me of it. That's how the way I can explain it. It was just like, I know this. Like I can do this. I just could do this. Like instantly. Never have learned it, right?
Yeah.
So within 4 months, I'm the class star because all the girls want to dance with me because the other guys are struggling because they're normal. Right. And I'm the one who's like, no, no, this way, this way. So, and then I started assisting the teacher and that became like, that was how I realized I had a gift and I became visible. So I did 3 years of this stuff in school. We started doing shows, we started doing local shows. And honestly, because I was a sad kid from my circumstances, this is the only thing that made me smart, made me happy. I was good at it. It was natural for me. It connected with everything somehow inside of me. So I just wanted to dance. And my parents were horrified. You know, you can't make a living at this. I want to be an architect originally. So you have to go to school and do all. It took me over. So at 19 years old, I moved away from my family. Another way to just get away from them. And I ended up in Vancouver, Canada. because there's no snow in Vancouver, trying to get away from the winter.
Yeah. Yep.
And there was no ballroom on the West Coast. It's interesting. It was everywhere on the East Coast. There was none of it on the West Coast. Interesting. Mm. So I ended up in a jazz studio. My roommate dragged me one day. I had a girl roommate. She was like, you meant to dance. You need to dance. You need to be there. So she dragged me on a Saturday morning to dance class. It was jazz class. Completely different, right? The stretching, the conditioning. It's an hour of conditioning before you even start dancing, right? Somebody else is teaching you something. You follow it. Mm. Anyway, what's interesting is that was not at all the style that I was used to. That's not what I did. But within 3 months in a jazz studio, they gave me a scholarship.
Wow.
And that was insane. Like, you don't know anything about 3 months. You can already stand up after 3 months. Again, there was something. There was something about me. And so that became my life. I never, ever paid for my training. Mm-hmm. I got scholarship after scholarship after scholarship at 3-4 different studios. I end up in a ballet studio for structure and frame and alignment of the body. It's essential, wow. Classical. There's a Go Ballet in Vancouver who there's highly, they're a Korean ballet company. Like, the studio's a castle, this like uppity. I took a class and they took me in. Like, it was ridiculous. So
that
became kind of on its own my life.
Yeah.
And I realized that's the destiny. Now, it was hard for me because I was logical. I have to go to school. I have to become an architect. Like, what is this? Right. But away from my family, I had no funds. So I thought, you know what? I'm going to give this a shot. I'm going to give this a couple of years because my heart is pulling me. Everything is pulling me that way. Okay. Yeah. So within that time, that's all I was doing. I was dancing. I was teaching. I was assisting. The people from Los Angeles that would come to Canada, you know, the whole circle and do summer programs. And I became an assistant for one of those guys from LA. Hollywood story, I'm telling you.
Yeah.
So the second summer that this guy came up and he'd like to have me assist him, invites me to Los Angeles to assist him and to be dance captain in his demo reel for his choreography. Mm. Just like actors have demo reels, dancers, choreographers, the same thing here. So he goes, come to LA for a couple of weeks. You know, bring your girlfriend, stay at my house. You know, you guys could do tour stuff. And but I need you to help me be dance captain for my demo. You know, you're a good leader. You're good. Yeah, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, okay,
dance captain is the one in the middle and everyone's kind of around him. Is that right?
It's actually the dance director and making sure everybody's on point, on time. Like, the choreography's tight. You know what I mean? I'm actually just drill sergeant to make sure that
things
beautiful.
So you're not in the actual dancing.
I'm in some of them, but I'm the running the show. I'm the director, if you want.
Gotcha. Yeah.
You know what I mean? So all I realized. It's my life. So Thursday night, me and my girlfriend actually drove from Vancouver to Los Angeles. So Thursday night, we get into town. We rehearse at the studio on the Friday. Saturday, also rehearsal, but Saturday night in the studio we trained at, there was a dancer party for dancers in town. So people that want to be part of, they're doing what they want to do, you know, at the party. So I'm in LA with my girl dancing. Hey, ooh-ha, you know what I mean? Saturday night, we're having fun, we're vacation.
Yeah.
I remember at one point, just that everybody's 23, 24, 25 years old, right? We're all young. But in the corner, there's an older gentleman in his late 40s, and he's staring at me. And every time I turn around, he's staring at me. So I guess getting irritated, and I'm like, oh, well, we're all in LA. Okay, I get it, right? So
anything might go in LA.
Like, right? Yeah. That's, you know, it took me a second because I'm Canadian.
Yeah.
It took me a moment. I'm like, oh, whatever. And then I see my buddy who asked me to come and help him. Talking to him, they know each other. Mm. They're talking and then look, and now they're clearly talking about me. But I'm getting really irritated. And then my buddy waves me over. I'm like, what the hell is he doing? He's going to introduce me to that old creep? What the hell's wrong with him? So I was too polite at that age. I was still young. So I went over and, you know, shake the guy's hand with attitude. My buddy pulls me outside. It was a back door. He goes, you want to like shut out? This is Steve Merritt. He wants to hire you for a show he's doing. He's looking for an extra dancer. He likes you. How about you say hi to Steve, you idiot? Pushes me back in the studio. So I'm like, oh, well, so nice to meet you, right? And it become like charming, I guess, in the moment.
Yeah.
Anyway, it turns out that he says, look, I've been auditioning in Los Angeles for 4 months. I lost one of my guys and I can't replace him. I can't find anybody. I've auditioned for 4 months.
Wow.
You're exactly what I'm looking for.
Wow.
He goes, what do you think? So I'm like, wow, well, what's the show? Are you ready? Are you ready?
I'm ready.
It's Chippendales.
The Chippendales, the strippers.
Yes.
Oh, right. And how did that go?
Oh, yeah. So you have to understand dancers are like actors and actresses, right? They can be really snooty. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I remember thinking like, oh, dude, I am a professional commercial jazz trained dancer. I'm not a stripper. He goes, well, I need you to do both. Like, I don't need you to strip. I need you to be part of the show. You know, I need the talent of the show. That's what I'm looking for. There's six strippers and four dancers. I need to be a dancer. So there's going to be some of that, but it's not really going to be your job necessarily. But he goes, let me ask you, like, how much money are you making being a commercial jazz trained dancer, right? I'm like, well, yeah, okay. He goes, so.
So what were you making?
Well, at the time I was struggling, you know, I was going show to show. I was teaching. I was making a living.
Yeah.
But it was nothing luxurious in Vancouver, right? You know, I was teaching at the colleges and it was working, but that was.
Minimum wage type thing.
You know, just enough to pay bills. I was making a living. Yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway, my girlfriend says, freaking go. Are you kidding me? Is this your own Hollywood story? We come into town. 2 days later, you get picked up to go on the road. Go. Mm-hmm. Well, that was my first big job in LA. So that allowed me. I was a tour for a year and a half.
Is that good money?
Ridiculous money.
What were you making?
I mean, it was $1,000 a week at the time.
Yeah.
And plus the guys would share their tips because the guys would did the tip and kiss out there. So we were doing all cash. Everything's paid for. We had no responsibilities.
Yeah.
Hotels covered, foods covered, transportation, whether we flew or took the bus. I mean, it was so much fun. And it became dangerous after a while too, because it turned out that after all this fun, I mean, we love rock and roll lifestyle, right? Sex, alcohol, women, drugs, like you name it, right?
The whole lot, 100%.
But I realized within about a year how dangerous it was for me, because it turned out that I wanted to be married. I wanted a family. And I realized how mind-bending that lifestyle is. One of the guys had been doing it for 5 years and he was completely out of his mind.
Really?
He was, it twists you. It twists you. It's like being a celebrity on some level. Like being a celebrity, like twists your reality. You're not normal. You're not one of the people. You're privileged.
100%.
You know, you get away with murder and your value system kind of gets completely altered. So if you want to stay traditional, you can't be doing this for a living. So Kevin, which is the alpha male of the group who had been with for 5 years, I just saw how like he was never able to have a relationship. They could never see women as the normal way, right? He's completely twisted.
Yeah.
And I knew at one point I started thinking the things he was saying out loud. I thought, I'm like, oh, I'm getting infected. I need to get out of here. So I quit.
Welcome to this short ad break. Not sure if you're aware, but I'm a personal trainer and have been for years now. So if you like the idea of training and being educated on how to eat for better health, then maybe it's time to hire me as your personal coach. You can start feeling confident, self-assured and healthy again, so you can attract the best kinds of lovers and friendships into your life today. You can apply for online or face-to-face coaching with me, where I will take you through a hybrid fitness system that covers the three pillars to success, where I take you through the deep work of mindset principles and help you achieve breakthroughs, guide you to understand meal preparation for your goals, and customize your weight training program to help you build a healthy physique that you can be proud of. Find the application link in the show notes of this episode. Back to the show.
Because to me, it was just a job. And again, as a dancer, I wasn't really training every day, which we need to do.
Yeah.
So I was making a living, but I'm kind of not, you know, I'm maybe getting sloppy and my timing, right? So I quit. And the guys are like, you're insane. It's the best job in the world. I'm like, no, that's you. I'm going to get to my life. This is just a job.
This is when
I moved to Los Angeles officially, because I had the funds to save all that money. And then got an agent. And that's started auditioning for commercials, television, movies, music videos are big at the time, right? So all that jazz. And that's how within becoming part of the machine, right? Like it's like a train. Everybody in LA who's auditioning is on the train. 85% of the people who are in the business don't belong in the business. They don't have the talent. They're just wannabes. So there's a big train going around, but it's only 15% of the people that actually make a living. They're literally on the train doing the life. And what happens is like Jennifer Lopez is sort of in our circle. And then once in a while, somebody goes popcorn, boop, gets the superstar. Jennifer Lopez, Paul Abdul, right? These are all dancers. You know what I mean? So on the train, this is when you live the life. And this is what Michael Jackson, Prince, Paul Abdul, Julio Iglesias, we did like 6 tango videos. And there was a bunch of others that you guys, nobody will know. They're up and coming and up and going a minute later. You know what I mean? Yeah. But traveled the world. I choreographed. I went to Thailand and was there for 4 months to choreograph a concert for like their number one pop female star. She would be like the equivalent of Janet Jackson here, but she was Janet Jackson of Thailand. And so I put the concert together there. So that was
my
life.
Can I ask you something just quickly? Because I know there's so much, obviously there's so much rich history there with what you're talking about. Do you envy their lifestyle, having been a part of
the celebrities?
Yeah. Obviously there's a lot of pressure there. A lot of pressure, a lot of moving parts with getting them to stuff like that. And obviously the dance is one compartment of it all. Yeah. What did you learn about these people by touring with them?
I learned that I didn't want to meet anybody that I idolized or liked, you know, on TV, because when I met them, I didn't like them anymore.
Yeah.
Like, I got the reality of it all. I had the reality of the business. I got the reality of the insanity. It's happened to me on some level. Especially with Paula, we ended up working for 2 years. We were dancing and teaching, so it was sort of a different machine a little bit, but teaching on the weekend, flying all over the place.
Mm.
And so people end up recognizing you. You're in the brochure, you're in the pamphlet on the website, right? And you're coming to this town, so they're waiting for you for weeks and months. And they've seen your pictures. You're one of the Paula's dancers. So in a hotel where you're just trying to do your job, get a bite to eat and go to sleep, you get followed. You can't eat. You know, somebody's in your face. And oh my God, you know, trying to get you to sign this and this and this. And it becomes super irritating.
Yeah.
Like, you can't do anything. You can't go anywhere. You're being stalked everywhere.
Mm.
And I'm just a freaking dancer. Do you know what I mean? So imagine the celebrity life is this all the time. They can't go to the park.
Yeah.
They can't go to the store. They can't go to the zoo. They can't go to the amusement park. They can't go anywhere because the mob that it creates. So they're hiding constantly and they don't work every day, right? So if you work like, let's say, 2 movies a year, you're working a few weeks, a few months, you know, depending on the talent. So what happened is these people end up having to hide in their houses all the time.
Really?
And they go to their friends' houses, you know, just to spend time. They have their posse. They end up in somebody's pool room. Playing pool, but you can't play pool all day long. It's no fun, right? So then you bring out the dope and the drugs and then the girls and then the music. So what happens is when you party all day long,
right,
or you don't have enough to do, you become numb to this. So in order to have fun within this, you have to keep upping the blind. When fun is normal every day, there's no fun anymore. So what do you do to get fun, right? You have to, this happened to me. And this is why I quit, because it gets really freaking demented. What's normal isn't normal anymore. And then again, the pressure of celebrity. And, you know, when Michael Jackson died, he had 35 lawsuits on his butt.
Crazy.
35. Like, there are people who are constantly, because you have money and they.
Yeah.
I think celebrity life sounds glamorous, but it's really horrible. And this is why we lose a lot of them to drugs, because they can't handle it. It's nuts. I have a friend here in Los Angeles who's making a couple $1 million a year making movies. Sort of B movies, if you want, but he's making movies.
Mm.
He makes $2 million a year and no one knows who he is. That's the life.
Great.
That's probably the life, better. Right?
Still making money.
That's what I'm saying. Making a ton of money doing what he wants as an actor, but he's not a public face. That to me, like, I got to taste it and I don't want it.
Interesting. Yeah. That's some really, really good insight there. Did you get close enough to these celebs to kind of have some intimate conversations with them?
Yeah.
And do they ever kind of let on about how hard the life is?
No, I mean, you don't get, you know, it's not like we're sitting and lounging for hours with a drink, right? It's moments here and there. But it was interesting to me that, you know, Michael was exactly who you think he is.
Yeah.
Shy, sweet, soft-spoken, you know what I mean? Prince was not. I thought musician was cooler by nature, right? They're cool.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Michael was weird.
Yeah.
Right? Musicians are cool. Well, no, not so much. So I could tell you like ridiculous stories, but it's not necessary. But it became like I didn't want to meet anybody I liked.
Yeah. Wow. You know? Interesting. So then obviously you got married, had kids.
Yep.
During that time, during phase one, had you had a partner? Were you in and out of relationships? Was it too hard to maintain a relationship during that time?
Oh, God, no. I mean, life on the road, that was a whole different story. But as soon as I got off the road, because of that, a lot of fun, a lot of women.
Mm.
That by the time I got off the road, I was sort of already ready to find the
done.
One.
Yeah, done with it.
You know, I was 27. I sort of had that craziness, you know, and even got my brain back going, this is crazy and dangerous. I need to get out of here, you know. Mm. So I did. So that kind of settled my brain into like, I've had fun. Now I want to find a companion. So I put my radar up literally, and I was teaching like 15 classes a week, I think. When I got off the road and started teaching everywhere, and it's me and 45 young, beautiful girls, right? Boop, 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 radar, boop, 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 always going. Doop, 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 doop. It was my girl, it was my girl.
Yep.
And sure enough, you know, so I dated a few, and I remember thinking, well, this is LA. And yeah, I found the quality very low. And again, I'm Canadian, I'm very traditional. I found out on the road there how traditional I was. It was interesting.
Yeah.
It was an interesting insight. So now I'm looking for the one, and No. And then my
I'd imagine you would have met a lot of leeches and a lot of, well, you could potentially take me somewhere, so I'm going to leech on you, that sort of stuff. Like that kind of like loving the fact that you had a little bit of status about you at the time.
Straight up. Yeah. So you don't know who likes you for what. You know, that's another problem with celebrity life. Like you don't know what people like you. You think, well, you know what I mean? Like you have to question everything. It's really weird. Yeah, there's 20% of the girls who would just, you know, and it's sort of in every business, right? Trying to get to the guy who's in charge. That's part of every business, right? Yeah. The guy's in charge, that's sexy, right? Oh, try to go for the top, right? The top man, whatever. So that I experienced that. But like I said, and then one day my wife walked into the space. She was late. She'd never been there. It's the first time in my class, I guess. And I remember it's just, she came in from the side. I was already teaching. She came in late because it was an odd time for that, whatever.
Yeah.
And I remember looking in the mirror going, I don't know who that is. And she came all the way around and she stood to my right, about 15 feet behind me. And I'm teaching. And then I let my assistant sort of take on to guide the rest of the warm up. And I turned around and I saw her and I'm like, and that was it. That was it. Like, this is my girl right there. This is my girl.
Yeah, right.
And I can't explain it to you. That was it. Like, put a fork in me, I'm done. And, you know, she had no idea. By the way, now that I do this work, you know, this is a very common thing. Men know first.
Mm-hmm.
Men say, this is my wife. It takes women 3 months to catch up.
100%. Men are very visual. They fall in love with their eyes, whereas women need to.
We're also very intuitive. It's not more than visual, it's intuitive. There's a knowing of things. You know, women don't really realize this. They think because we don't talk much, that we don't share much, that we don't have much going on inside.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very intuitive to a place that it's the same way you girls, like, you know, you gut feelings. That's so like runs the show. Like if you tap into being feminine, if you know things that you don't have means to know, right? You sense it.
Mm-hmm.
We know it. So
I believe
this is my wife. This is my girl.
Totally believe that. So how many kids did you guys? So is she still your wife? Still married?
Oh yeah.
And it's this been how many years?
God, 30 years last October.
Is there an age gap between you guys?
5 years. So she's 5 years younger than me.
Yeah, perfect. Beautiful. Yeah, absolutely nice. Perfect. How awesome. And then you fell into relationship coaching. So tell us about that.
Well, again, if you go back to my childhood and questioning and looking at everything, part of my, even through my childhood and my younger years, I became fascinated with the human condition.
Mm.
So I never stopped that, even through my career with dancing. Like I was taking personal development at the age of 23. I started doing that. I was a workshop head. I was always in a workshop.
Mm.
On the weekend, you look for me, I'm in a workshop somewhere, learning something else. I have a thirst for knowledge and I'm curious about everything. So anything that anybody really is a really good at, I want to know it. So that's my brain. But a lot of it through human condition, why people are successful, you know, how to make money, how do you sustain money? So all of that constantly. Even when I was dancing and even when I started the shop, I was constantly in personal development. So 2006, this is a big moment. I'm in Northern California in a business workshop. I was trying to get my business to the next level. So I took a 3-day workshop, of course, doing that. I meet some people in there. It was really cool. On the way, plane back to Los Angeles, the couple that I met is sitting in the same row with me, seemingly randomly, not so much anymore. Now, I don't think that anymore. At the time I did, but so the lady says to me, she goes, what are you doing next weekend? I go, actually, I'm off next weekend. Why? She goes, do you want to come to a workshop? It's on me. I'm like, of course. Workshop head. And then I go, wait, what's the workshop? Because I agree even about knowing, because those things can be expensive, right?
Absolutely.
And she's like, it's called Understanding Women.
Cool.
Interesting.
Yes.
Now, again, I've had an ease with women. Without arrogance, I thought I knew something. It's maybe because my artistic personality, I'm easygoing. I think I never did the crazy thing my friend did with their women. I never did the screaming and the fighting and none of that. I always attracted sweet women.
Sure.
So I'm like, I'm going to spend a weekend understanding women. Okay. So I went in there a little bit sideways, you know, but I said I was going to go, so I did. Mm-hmm. And I remember walking into space and there was 400 people in the space. And I remember going, oh, I instantly vibe like, oh, this is not going to be cute. This is there's something going on here. Like I do know me the vibe you could feel.
Yeah.
There was 300 women, 100 men, which I thought was interesting.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Like you would not find many men in a workshop called Understanding Men. Like, you know, anyways, I realized I just jumped in And all I could tell you is at the end of the workshop, my brain's all over the walls. My head exploded. I couldn't believe what I learned. I realized I knew nothing about women, which was insane. Like not even a little bit.
Yeah. Talk about three things, things that you took away from that workshop that really skewed your reality versus what you thought you knew.
Well, I didn't know what I thought I knew until you started describing what I don't know. And I realized I knew nothing, but that's what it came to. Right. So one of the things that I realized is that with my wife at the time, you know, we're married for a while. We have little kids. I'm not looking for any of this. We're doing fine. So I think I'm cool. So I know something. But one of the things that came through was that as a good man, as a good husband, I never want to hurt my wife's feelings ever. Right. But I constantly do. How is that possible?
Yeah.
Right. So that was interesting because what I say is not what she hears.
Yeah.
What I don't say, she'll make a meaning out of. If I say something off, that means something else. You know what I mean? I found that one devastating. So when I think back, I remember thinking, this is the interpretation from women when we hurt their feelings, that women typically think that we know what we're doing when we hurt their feelings. And that way she chooses to do that. Otherwise, you wouldn't do it. And I remember thinking, oh my God, how much of this could a woman take? Because if it's one thing to get your feelings hurt if I'm stupid, but if you think that I'm doing it on purpose, I know better and I'm doing it on purpose, that's nasty, right? But that's how it occurs to a lot of women. Like, he knows better than say this, that you do this. I don't, I'm just a dude. But to a woman, it appears something else. So that freaked me out. That freaked me out. And this is why I ended up jumping in the company's curriculum, took all their workshops, because I was not going to be statistic like the rest of my family because I didn't know. Like, I was going to lose my baby girl and my family because I didn't know, right? I'm not that guy. So I went literally crazy. And that was the beginning of my career. Like, I took all their curriculum. I became a workshop leader within a year because I'm a teacher, right? That's a no-brainer.
Yeah.
I'm used to crowds and being in front of crowds and all that stuff. And I love the material. And that was the beginning. That's how it started. And from there, I didn't continue with these people, but I continued to study it at John Gray, Mars and Venus Man. Shanti Kelhan in the South, Esther Perel from New York City, who is now famous at a time she wasn't, Dr. Pat Allen. So I have five masters that I trained under that all connect to relationship matters.
Sure.
Whether it's anthropology, science, you know, chemistry, psychological. So the cocktail of my work is, I think, without arrogance, untouchable. So
yeah,
I can explain to you the dynamics between men and women and all these aspects. And it became like the more I studied, the more people started coming after me.
And
that's how the business started.
Wonderful.
2006.
Yep. I want to talk to you today because I think this is now a really good segue to move into it. Why do power couples not last?
Yes.
Yeah. Because I think, you know, realistically, deep down, a lot of people want to feel like they find their true equal. And it almost feels like they want that relationship where they walk into a room, everyone knows that they're there. Now, I'm not saying everyone wants that, but there are probably couples out there that want to feel like they have someone that they feel like they can take over the world with, right? But when we're talking about actual power couples that have actual status, like celebrities, for example, why do you think that they don't last?
Well, it's not my thinking. It's not my opinion. It's this data on this, left and right. You see celebrities get married and divorced 16 times in their celebrity life. Do you know what I mean? There's a reason for that. It doesn't work, right? Power couples don't work. It's very, very popular now because women want to be strong, independent, and powerful, which is very, 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 very masculine in itself, right? Yeah. You want to be a man. You act like a man. You work like a man. You make money like a man. So that's one thing. That's okay. But energetically, that doesn't attract men. That attracts feminine men. So power couples often, you know, come in with the idea that we're going to come together. I'm smart, you're smart, you have a business, so we're going to start a business together, right? They will start typically as a romantic relationship and then decide they're going to become power couple and they go to work together, right? Now, work together is man on man. Working together is masculine with the masculine. So what happens is even though they started in a romantic dynamic where he was a man, she was a woman. They literally equalize the dynamic and the polarity between them. They become man on man. And what happens is sexual energy between them disappears. That's just what happens. So within a few years, I've never seen anybody past 10 years of a power couple. They're completely neutralized. They make a ton of money, but they're both having affairs. They can't help it. It's not made to work that way. You can't be man on man in a love dynamic. you neutralize the thing and people fall out. So that's why it doesn't work. And I was very, very popular because women are strong, independent, powerful, and then men are men, and they like to conquer everything. So we think together we'll make something even bigger. On paper, it sounds great. In reality, does not work.
You know, for someone like yourself that has come so close to fame, how have you remained so grounded in your relationship?
Ooh, like I said, I think I'm really traditional, and my wife is very traditional. And I think my wife, if I look at like the version of power couples that works, I guess is pretty much what we have. So my wife is a ballerina. So she got into my class because she's a ballet dancer. She wanted to get the LA style in her. She's a prima ballerina for 6 years. I don't know if you know what that means, but prima ballerinas, there's only 13 of them in the United States at all times, right? The queen bee of the ballet company that exists in that city.
Right.
So she was two different companies. So she was the queen bee. She was the star of the company she was working with, dancing with. She was bored with this and she wanted to hit the commercial world. So come to Los Angeles and make him, you know, walk into my class. So she was a dancer. She's a ballerina, highly trained, right? Prima, I mean, that's insane. The training started at 5 years old. We decided to build a family. That's when I quit the road and opened the other business to keep me on the ground, to keep me in town so I could be here with my kids and raise my kids and be present. But get this. So I'm working 12-hour days and I totally don't mind doing that. I'm a man. I leave the house at 7. I come home at 7 p.m., right? 12-hour days. That's my world, but that's what I have to do to provide to protect my family. And my wife, as a ballerina, gets to teach and live her passion to still dance. But she's doing it in colleges. So she teaches two different colleges, two and three times a week, depending on the cycle, the semester. Right? So she's working part-time, making pretty much full-time money.
Yeah.
But very part-time, living her passion, still dancing and teaching and mentoring these students and her girls into the same way she was nurtured, right? So there's a nurturing feminine in that that she loves and to passing on, right? But she still gets to drive home, pick up the kids from school at 3 p.m., take them home, make them a snack, do their homework, right? So there's a very traditional value here where she got to live her passion, but still be a mom, and still be a wife, and still be home half the time, and still be feminine, where I'm out there killing myself. But I didn't mind it. I mean, seriously, like there's a lot of pride for males, normal males, to do this, right? Some of my proudest moment is that we pull up in the garage, you know, in the summer, it's light till 9 o'clock, so I pull up in the garage at 7 p.m., in the summertime, and my car is really loud. I got a crazy machine because I'm a car guy, whatever.
What do you drive? What do you drive just quickly?
Now I drive a Bentley, but back in the days I was driving a Chrysler 300.
Oh, nice.
It was souped up with big pipes and just a
love it.
Big old machine. So that thing in the garage, you know, sound system was nuts. So I would pull him in the garage and you could hear me coming, but I heard nothing. Anyway, I remember just turning off the car, right? And I could hear them in the pool. I could hear my wife and my kids playing in the pool. And I just put a big smile on my face. I'm like, because they get to live like this because I'm out doing this. And there's a lot of pride in that for males, for masculine male, to be able to do this. You know, I don't mind working these hours because I get to be the man who provides all of this, provide, protect, cherish, and give them a lifestyle that I find appropriate for them.
Obviously, with being a masculine man too, and I think, there's a fine line between working too much where you're not present for that and working just enough where you can provide, cherish, protect, and not sort of, push your family to the side and, you know, to the point where it kills the intimacy in the relationship because all you're doing is working because now you feel like you're stuck on this treadmill and all you have to do, all you can do is provide. For men, what is the sweet spot for being present and providing?
I can't speak for anybody else. I can tell you for me, I set it up like this on purpose. Now, I'm an entrepreneur. I do my own thing. I can't work for anybody. I have to be my own boss. That's my brain. I can't, you know, so it's different. And it's a lot of challenges with being an entrepreneur because it can suck you in like crazy because, you know, it's all on you. But the way I designed my life is when I stopped dancing because we're going to have children, I opened the business. The business was 6 minutes from my house and the school was two blocks away from my house. So I designed it that was present for everything. I was local, you know what I mean? So I worked regular business hours, whether it was school, but I came home at 7 o'clock. I was there in the morning. But at the same time, because I'm the boss, me and my wife, we're at every party, every meet, every Christmas parade, every Halloween parade, every event in the auditorium where the kids are on stage, right? Both of us in the audience.
Yeah. Beautiful.
Something I never had, you know, but I designed my life this way. So it's not always possible for, if you're working for a corporation, for a company, right? You're bound by those hours and the lifestyle, and some men have to travel for their job. So it's just, you know, for me, I guess I could design it myself.
Yeah.
It was important to do it this way. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah. What do you reckon is wrong about feminism? What's your viewpoint on that?
Oh, good. We're going to go there. Yeah. Well, you know, I think originally it was a good idea. I'm going to say this originally was a good idea. The idea was to give women choice or choices. And it's interesting when you talk about choices, right? Because we give women the choice to not be housewives and go in the workforce and, you know, do whatever you want. And you've proven over the past few decades that you can do anything at all. It's already proven. You don't have to prove it anymore. You can do anything at all. Fantastic. Great. But what happened is it transgressed from giving women choice to, what's the word? You know, if you're not a working woman, you're a traitor to the sisterhood. You know, some of the women, when my kids were smaller in school, some of the ladies that were stay-at-home women, stay-at-home mothers, couldn't say that out loud. The other women would attack them. Like, girl, are you crazy? Like, you know, what if he leaves you? What if he cheats on you? Like, you know, don't you want some independence? It would shame them and almost like call them lazy because they didn't go to work, you know, 9 to 5. Like being a mother is easy, right? There's nothing to do there, right? It's a lot of work.
I guess.
But it's a different.
I guess with that, I understand part of that, and women talk together. And I guess where it would really matter is where they can identify that their friend might be in a bit of a toxic relationship situation and they're codependent on the male. And that's where they might be going, look, probably wouldn't it be a bad idea to start looking at plan B in case this relationship falls. Plan B, maybe B, go back to work twice a week, start regaining some form of financial independence so that, you know, you're not on your ass on the street if it does go belly up, because there's no saving the relationship.
Well, they were all doing that, by the way. They're all like incredibly smart women. I had one lady had 2 masters in psychology. The other one was a freaking lawyer. But they both had 3 kids.
Yeah.
So that sort of fell aside, but, you know, they could get back on that wagon anytime they wanted. Originally, they thought they were going to have a couple of kids and go back to work. And they realized, I don't want to go back to work. My husband makes a lot of money and I want to be here with my kids. And that became their lives. And they're a lot happier doing that than when they were lawyers. So that's their choice. Sure. My point is they can't even talk about it out loud. They get attacked. Well, shame. My assistant is 27 years old. She wants 2 kids and a husband. And she can't say that out loud at school. They literally just, girl, there's something wrong with you. You know, you're better than this. You're better than being somebody's mom and some slave to some dude. She's like, can you shut the hell up? But she's very feminine, so she can't. She doesn't even bring it up because she doesn't want to fight.
That's
the new feminist movement, right? That you have to be a man, otherwise you're less than a woman. And then it actually turned against men because now it's now a man-hating program. It's anti-male. You know, toxic masculinity. You can't trust them. Right? You don't need no man. Be strong, independent. Like, so now it's gotten so far the other way that men are going, fine, we're not playing with you no more. Fine. And women are like, my clients, where are the men? I'm like, well, you keep calling him names. You can call him stupid. You keep shaming them for being masculine. You want it to be sweet and sensitive. That's a girlfriend. That's not a man. You know nothing about men. You want them to do it your way. They're not gonna. You want them to be like, they're not. And then you shame them. You call them names. You tell them, you know, you try to force them to do it. It doesn't work. Men step back. And then they find themselves lonely and think there's something wrong with men. And ultimately, it's not. It's the dynamic. It's the energy you bring. You can't disrespect men and think they're going to stick around. This is what's happening with the feminist movement. That's what I think. You know, this is what I see.
I think this is where women are running into these constant roadblocks, for example, because there's that pull toward feminism and then that desire to still want to have a man and children in your life and do what women were actually organically built to do. You know, and that is to nurture and care and stuff like that. And I'm kind of with you on that one. I'm not really a huge fan of feminism. I'm sort of like a 50-50, but I'm definitely no man-hating, like, I got this. I'm very much, we need men in life. Like, men serve a purpose just as men need us in life. We serve each other. And half the reason why women are stressed out to their eyeballs is because they're trying to work like men. As long and as hard as men, our body, our adrenaline glands are physically not built for that. We're not built for long hours. We're built to take it slow and flow and relax. And that's what we're built for.
Yeah, so, you're not built for competition. You're not built for that kind of stress. You're not built to fight. You're not built to conquer. You're not built for this, right? The way I explain to ladies is like, you know, you're familiar with Formula One race cars? You know, the four tires and the guy in the middle, they go like 400 miles an hour. Formula One race. I go, ladies, you're jumping in a Formula One race in your Toyota Camry. You're jumping in a race with like insane, you know, performing machines on jet fuel, and you get in the race in your Toyota Camry with four cylinders, and you'll get enough space and you go around and around for a while, but the engine's going to blow up. You're not built for that.
Yeah.
And that's physically, now, again, women don't like to hear this. Like, well, that's not right. I go, well, blame God, right? You're not physiologically built for that kind of stress. You become adrenalized, and we now know adrenaline in your bloodstream for years and years, living that lifestyle. Burns all your organs. So you basically, we now call this kind of like go girl lifestyle, highly stressed and performing and competition, we now call it cancer training for ladies.
I'm going to ask you one more question.
Yes, please.
And then we're going to wrap it up. Why are women more unhappy than ever in human history, do you think?
Because they're living like men and they're not wired to live like men. Right? Women need to feel safe to be happy. And what does a woman make a woman feel safe? Something bigger and stronger than her to protect her.
Yep.
Typically a big dude.
Yep.
Right? So this is from the beginning of time, right? Cave woman was the same thing. Cave woman had to survive by snuggling up to a big dude who was able to hunt and had a teepee that wasn't leaking and keep her warm and fed, protect her from the environment. And when he proved that he's capable of doing this, she would copulate with him and make a baby. It became his legacy. You know what I mean? That's nature. So everything in nature is that. So we make women act like men, which repels men, and that whole thing falls apart. And women really ultimately don't feel safe competing and being men in the world. They don't feel safe. They're stressed out. They're anxious. They're overwhelmed. You know, their energy is twiggy, and the tension in their bodies is insane, which actually makes men even go back another step. Like, anxious women, stressed out women, like, that's not sexy, right? So the safety that you want, man, just because you're overwhelmed and constantly stressed out, they actually push everybody away. And then your masculinity is in direct conflict to my masculinity. It's just disrespectful to my identity, my innate masculinity. I walk away. I don't want it to be around that. Right? So women are miserable because they can't connect with men. They can't build a relationship.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They use sexuality to try to entrap men or kind of entice them. That doesn't work because that's not how men attach to women. Sex has never built a relationship ever. That's not how it works.
No.
But that's what they resort to, having sex with men, thinking, you know, he's going to find me the most desirable. That's not how it works. So women are like doing everything wrong, literally, in what works for men, and wonder why men don't stick around. And then they will blame men for it, when actually the fact is you living like men is destroying everything about you that men find attractive and want to attach to. It's horrible. It's horrible.
Such a good point. If you had three pieces of advice for people to have healthy relationships, what would they be?
Well, very simply, again, everything I teach is not my opinion. It's nature and science.
Yeah.
And, you know, chemistry, like it's nature. It's just nature.
Yeah.
And so if you're a male, you want to live through your male essence. A male has to go conquer, fight, push, compete, build something, fight against his fear, push through it. Build his character doing that so he can be respected by both men and women. That's what men have to do. What does a woman have to do to be cherished?
Well, I'm a gay woman, so I kind of swing between both male and female.
Sure.
Male and feminine polarities.
The ultimate feminine, what's the ultimate feminine have to do?
The ultimate feminine.
To be cherished.
To be cherished. But I think it's allowing a sense of vulnerability. And I think when...
There you go.
Yeah, having that sense of vulnerability also allows a man... Because I think men need a safe space to feel vulnerable as well and to open up.
The way that it works in my world is that without vulnerability from women first, men can show up or attach to you.
Yeah.
So the feminine is vulnerable, the masculine controls. Right? When women want to control, men can't hang on to. Men will not get vulnerable first. You have to open those channels with your own vulnerability for men to connect and attach to you emotionally. So... That's another piece of advice. So if you're male, conquer, be a man, do what men do to be respected, self-respect and respect by others. For a woman, you really have to do nothing but breathe to be cherished by men. Women, seriously, you'd have nothing to do. You have to breathe. Like, your woman will provide, protect you because you're a woman. You know, men pull over on the side of the road when you're stuck, not women. We are the protective provider of all women and children and anything that's weaker, that's not fair. That's what we do naturally. The man, now the boys don't do that. Different story, right? There's different types of men. So the real man, this is what we do. So as a woman, instead of trying to act like a man, which repels men, live through your essence as a woman. Your essence is warm, feminine, inviting, right? Inspiring. The feminine inspires us to be better men, inspiring, right? You're all about connection and relationships all around you. You're the Velcro of the world that way. That's the feminine, right? So let's be man and conquer and take care of you, where you do all the connecting work and the fluid work and the nurturing work that actually is better for you and your essence. You're happier. I feel like a stud. And together we're building a life and family and a legacy. Because we actually line up with the things that we're naturally made to, we're complementary naturally. So let's do both our pieces and we can create something fantastic. That's nature.
Yeah. So I guess the message here is women can still go to work and have a career and stuff like that.
My wife does.
But then it's also having that balance where she can attend to the children, be home, look after the house, and not feel like they have to be the sole breadwinner, especially where there's a male involved.
Yeah.
Because essentially that should be his job. Once you start trying to be the man, that's where it ruins the intimacy in a relationship.
Totally, totally. No, I have to tell you this. Maybe two or three times every year, I get a call from a woman.
Yeah.
Who says, I need your help. And they go, okay, tell me what's going on. She goes, I don't understand. Tell me more. She goes, I have everything. I have a great job. I make good money. You know, we live in a fantastic lifestyle with both of our incomes. I have two kids. I have a husband. I have everything. We have the house. We have everything. I go, well, what's the problem? She goes, that's the problem. I don't know what's my problem. She goes, I'm not happy. I feel hollow. I feel like I'm living outside my life. I can't connect with anything. I can't connect with my kids. I can't connect with my husband. My work takes most of my energy. By the end of the day, I have nothing left. I feel hollow. This is the word they use. I feel hollow. Like I'm watching somebody else's life and I'm missing it completely in my life, but I'm in it. Right? But I'm not happy. What's wrong with me? I go, honey, you're burnt out. You're living a lifestyle of full-time employee or businesswoman and full-time mom trying to be. That's two full-time jobs. No one can do it right. So the ones who even manage to do it right, they burn out and everything lovely about them disappears. So they're not really present for the husband. They're not really present for the kids. They're not really present when they're in the house. They're a shell of themselves. Plus the stress, the anxiety. Everyone suffers. My wife, when she sometimes has some of the quarters, she does a production at one of the theaters where they actually produce something. So they have to go rehearsal and late and, you know, a few weeks of like working more than usual and comes home later. When she works more, we lose her completely. Even when she's in the house, she disappears from us. And everything warm in our house disappears. Everything that is her, that is feminine, that is nurturing is gone. Even she's sitting right with us. She's not here. There's no energy to be. So they say that to me, like, I have everything. What's wrong with me? I go, you're living too much. Like, you have too much on your plate. You can't take care of everybody and you can't take care of yourself in that. So you can have a job, but if you have a husband and family, like, work less and go more with the flow of being the nurturing feminine, you know, take care of the stuff easy going underneath. You know what I mean? You don't need to work 40, 50, 60 hour weeks. That'll kill you. Because you come home and the house needs everything.
Do you help women step more into their feminine?
That's all I do. That's all I do.
Yeah.
Literally, because they're completely like this. They're completely masculinized and they don't understand why men don't want to date them or get one date and the guy disappears or they're invisible somehow. I'm pretty. I'm young. I have money. I have a house, a car. I have everything. I have no trouble. I can take care of myself. Why don't they love me? Right? I go, honey, you're a dude. You're a dude. The feminine is so neglected. So what I do is I do this. And then they get to see in my world, a true badass, right? They're so popular in the United States. You know, I'm a badass boss babe, right? Like, I'm a dude is what you're saying. Men don't like dudes. Men don't date dudes. Hunters don't date hunters.
Yeah.
Right? But women pride themselves like this, that they're prized because they make money. Men don't care about anybody's money. Men don't care about your money. Men don't give a crap about your business. They don't. No. They want the feminine, right? So when they realize that's not working, you know what I mean? You're too masculine. So I literally just bring their feminine back. We nurture, cultivate their feminine. And then like I said, you have to be masculine to work. I get it.
Yeah.
But when you get off of work, you have to be a woman in the world, right? So now in my world, a true badass woman is a woman that knows exactly how to do both. Now that takes a little practice in all that jazz, right? Because they've 100%. Really practiced themselves out. And that's the work that I do. It's quite fantastic to watch them change.
Yep.
And by the way, the moment they do this,
yep.
they get taken off the market like this.
Yeah, right. It's that's crazy. Amazing.
Off because they're feminine, they're lovely, they understand men more, they know how to respect men, which is the number one requirement for men to get in a relationship. They know how to respect, I teach them that, right? And they know how to instinctively bring the best out of a man, not manipulation. Men want to provide, protect naturally, right? You have to let them, you have to invite them to do so. And also they feel like men, they're the hero. So everything instinctively that we are shows up. It'll give you the world when you respect him and make him the hero. And then you get to chill in that. You get to receive and be able to be relaxed and be feminine and be more nurturing and all that. So it's, again, back to nature. It's beautiful. By the way, I think you know this, but I officiate weddings and some of my couples, I marry them myself.
Oh, I have some coming up. You're a celebrant?
Yeah, I'm a minister.
Okay, there you go.
I'm doing a wedding in Vegas in 2 months and I go to Texas in May to do another one this year.
How cool is that?
Before COVID. I know. So my point is my women, my ladies, when they're tuned in and actually kind of more back into balance with their body, their essence, and know how to be feminine and know how to go to work as well, because we don't take that away, but they know how to flex with it off the market, and within a year, be my wife. That's fantastic.
There you go.
That's fantastic.
All right. So, Andre, I reckon you and I could talk all day, but I know you've got a special offer for the audience today. So tell us about that.
Yes. What I have to give for your listeners, and it's interesting because listeners come in two varieties, right? The people who just want more information, and there's people who just want to work, like they want to get this now. So I guess kind of a twofold offer. If anybody emails me, so my email is andrecoaching1@gmail.com. And the email heading, if you just put irresistible ebook, I want to send you my ebook. It's called The Five Feminine Qualities That Men Find Irresistible.
Yeah.
It's fantastic. It's quite a piece.
Yeah.
Just for listening, you know, it's a $10 book. I'll send it to your listeners for free.
Yep.
Those for the ones who want more information. For the ones who really want to jump in, right? Like the ones who want more juice, email me and in the topic, just write talk now. And what I'll do is I'll find some space on my calendar and I'll send you a link to have a Zoom call, an exploratory Zoom call. And we'll talk about what's challenging you, what you want, and how it could help.
So
it's really fantastic.
The affiliate link that you've given me, should we just post that in the show notes below?
Yes.
So I've got projectequinox.net/divine. So there that there will take your link directly to the video. So when you're going to be talking in that video, what are you going to be mentioning?
In the video, I'm basically the offer that I just mentioned. Email me to get a free book and then ask me something in the email, you know, that you challenge with, and I'll respond to you.
Yeah.
But if you want to step in for the ones that are more like action driven, want to take action, right? Just tell me you want to talk now and I'll send you a link to my calendar and then we'll book a time together. And then we'll have a conversation about really life, like one-on-one with what is it that you challenge with. We'll peel that onion back really quick. I'm really good at this. Like 10 minutes, we'll peel the onion about where you're stuck and why you're stuck. And then what's the future? What's the dream? What's the goal? What's the dream? And then offer what I have to offer. There's different ways to, you know, get invested with my work, the small, medium, large, all that jazz. So
brilliant.
It's a good gift, I think.
100%, 100%. I think everyone needs to start investing into hiring people like yourself and learning a lot more about who we are at our core level, our soul level, and stop sort of trying to treat this as a bit of a guessing game, because there's a lot to learn about ourselves and we're trained up and skilled up for sports and jobs, but we're really not geared enough for relationships, and people need to start putting some of their time and energy into stuff like this. Guys, reach out to Andre. Andre, he has, you know, very well cultured, has seen both ends of the spectrum, all the way from celebrity down into normality, if that's what you want to call it. It's about finding balance, nice balance in your relationship with who you are. So reach out. That will be in the show notes below. But Andre, thank you so much for your time and energy today. It's been a really nice chat. It's been great. We'll probably bring you back on. There's another topic I want to sort of dissect with you. Okay. And we'll talk to you very soon.
Thank you, darling. I appreciate it.